Okay, we're beginning here with the new perek on the top of Samach Vav Amud Aleph. Before we start the perek, just a little background about the dowries that are brought by women into a marriage. The dowries that are brought into the marriage manifest themselves in two forms. There's what's called Nichsei Tzonu Barzel, and then there's Nichsei Melog. When a woman brings in the dowry to the marriage, there are two ways to assess the value of what she is bringing into the marriage, as well as the responsibility vis-a-vis that value. So let's start with Tzonu Barzel. Like their name suggests, Tzonu Barzel is something that stays fixed, maintains or preserves its value. And that is when the woman brings in these items into the marriage, the value of these items is assessed and then marked into the ketubah. So these items that she's bringing in, we give a monetary assessment of the value of these items that she is bringing into the marriage. And that monetary value is then written into the ketubah. In addition to that, there's sometimes a tosefet mishelo. He can actually gift items like this in this similar manner to the woman. And those items also are assessed for their value. Now, as far as the husband's responsibility now, his only responsibility is to return that value to the woman. That means the objects themselves really belong to the husband at this point in time. We'll see exactly how much they belong to him, how much they belong to her, that the Gemara will discuss. But the objects now belong to the husband, and therefore if the objects increase in value, or we'll see possibly diminish in value, that will be on the husband's tab, and he will have to then at the occasion of either his death or if he divorces her, pay out the full value of these items back to the woman. But he has no other responsibilities to the woman vis-a-vis these items except for the replacement of their value in the case of divorce or in the case that she is widowed and she receives her ketubah. Those are called Nichsei Tzon Ubarzel. On the other hand, there's something called Nichsei Melog. In the case of Nichsei Melog, the woman brings into the marriage certain items, but the value of those items or the ownership of those items remain with the woman. The husband is entitled to benefit from the payrot of those items or the equivalent of what we call the leasehold in those items. He has the ability to utilize them. He has the ability to gain the benefit from those items, but he doesn't own the underlying keren, the principal of those items. And therefore, in the case of increase in value or diminishment in value, those are items that will increase or decrease in value to the woman herself, since she technically owns them. But the husband just gets the benefit of the leasehold in these items. So those are called Nichsei Melog. What the Mishnah is going to discuss is the ownership of these items of Nichsei Melog and Nichsei Tzon and Barzel. How do they affect the object's ability to eat truma? Because when a woman marries a kohen, she is able to eat truma because she is now kinyan kaspo. She now is a party to the kohen's family. And being a party to the kohen's family, she's entitled to eat truma. That is also true of the items that the kohen owns. As long as the kohen owns the item, that item is entitled to eat truma. So for instance, avadim, servants, Eved Kenani, that are owned by the Kohen, they also eat Truma because of the Kinyan of the Kohen. Now, the question the Mishnah will deal with is, if a woman is bringing into the marriage Avadim as part of her dowry, are those Avadim entitled to eat Truma because they are part of the ownership of the husband? Or even if they're ownership of the woman because the woman is in the Kohen's family, does that also entitle them to eat truma? And that's what the Mishnah is dealing with, except that this is a case where there is a problematic marriage. So the problematic marriage might change the way that we view these items, which is almanah the kohen gadol. You have a widow who marrying a kohen gadol, which is a problematic marriage since a kohen gadol is not allowed to marry an almanah. Hushav chalutzah the kohen echot, or a case of a divorcee or a chalutza that married a regular kohen, which is also a problematic marriage. Hichnisu lo avdei melog v'avdei tzonu barzel. Into the marriage, she brings in servants, eved kenani, some of which are nechsei melog, where she owns them but the husband has the output value of those objects. And some of them where they're Avdei Tzon Barzel, where the husband owns them, in a sense, but he is on the hook for the value of these items. Avdei Melog lo yochlu b'truma. The Avdei Melog do not eat from the truma, but Avdei Tzon Barzel yochlu. But the Avdei Tzon Barzel will eat from the truma. Ve'eluhein Avdei Melog. What is classified as Avdei Melog, the ones that will not eat from the truma? Imetu metula. Vim hotiru, hotiru la. That's where she has the underlying ownership of the object. And therefore, if the avadim die, it's on her tab, it's her loss. Vim hotiru, if they go up in value, then the increase in value will accrete to her. Afalpi shehu chayav b'mizonotan. Now, even though, when it comes to these nichsei melog, he's obligated to provide sustenance for them, harielu lo yuchlu b'truma, still, he cannot fulfill that obligation through using truma. Ve'elohein avdei tzon barzel. What are classified as these avadim that have a status of tzon barzel? Im metu, metu lo. Im hotiru, hotiru lo. That's where the ownership is firmly in his possession because he's on the hook in both directions. That means if the value increases, that value accrues to him. And if there's a loss in value, he is on the hook for that loss in value because in the ketubah, he's basically promised to return the value of these items to the woman. Now, the lashon that is used here is interesting. When it talks about increase in value, it simply uses the word hotiru, that they went up in value. On the other hand, when it talks about diminishment of value, it doesn't say pichatu, which would have been the opposite of hotiru, but rather it says metu. From here, many of the rishonim are midayek, that it's only a diminishment in value which inhibits the object from performing its previous utility that is considered to be a diminishment in value for which the husband is on the hook. But if it's simply wear and tear or the normal diminishment of value, then the husband won't be on the hook for that. He can simply return the object because the Mishnah does not term it as pichatu, but rather imetu. So it looks at the diminishment value as being something that is something more extreme than the normal wear and tear or depreciation of the object. And then the Mishnah concludes with regards to these avadim that are tzon barzel, hoil v'hu chayab achariyutan, since he's on the hook for and responsible for the value change here, therefore they can eat the truma. So for the first half of the Mishnah, it would look like the avadim that are tzon barzel are owned by him, therefore they participate in the truma. Whereas the Nechsei Melog or the Avdei Melog are not really owned by him, therefore they do not participate in the Truma. But now we're going to see from the second half of the Mishnah that that's not necessarily true. And then we'll understand more about the first half of the Mishnah, which is Bat Yisrael Shenisseit HaKohen. Here where you have a proper marriage, not a problematic marriage like in the first half of the Mishnah, which is a regular Bat Yisrael that marries a Kohen. V'chnisa lo Avadim. And she brings in servants to the marriage, ben avdei melog, ben avdei tzon barzel, hari elu yochlu b'truma. Whether they're avadim that are classified as nichsei tzon barzel, or whether they're avadim that are classified as nichsei melog in the dowry when she brings them into the marriage, they all are entitled to eat truma. So you see from here that there is no distinction with regards to truma by Avdei Melog and Avdei Tzon Barzel. In both instances, they are considered to be enough of the Kinyan Kasbo, the household property of the Kohen, and therefore they are entitled to eat Truma. That means that whatever is happening in the ratio of the Mishnah is a result of the problematic marriage. And that problematic marriage is what leads us to differentiate between the Nichsei Tzon Barzel and the Nichsei Melog. The question as to why will be discussed in the Gemara. Ubat Kohen Shenisseit Yisrael. When you have the other way around, which is a Bat Kohen who was entitled to eat Truma in her father's house, and now marries a Yisrael, which will take her out of the world of Truma. V'chnisa lo Avadim. And she brings into the marriage Ben Avdei Melog, Ben Avdei Tzon Barzel. Doesn't matter how they are classified when she brings them into marriage. Hari lo elu lo yochlu b'truma. From now on, they will not eat truma because they are part of the household of the Yisrael. And just like in any case of the Kinyan Kaspo of Yisrael, they're not entitled to eat truma. So too, these Avadim now are not entitled to eat truma. what we see from the latter half of the Mishnah is that Avadim, whether they're Nechsei Malok or Nechsei Tzon of Barzel, they are the property of the husband vis-a-vis the issue of Truma. And therefore, when it's a Kohen and the woman is bringing it into the marriage with the Kohen, they will eat Truma. When it is Yisrael and the woman's bringing them into a marriage with Yisrael, they will not eat Truma. Of course, we'll have to explain the first half of the Mishnah where we did make such a distinction between Nechsei Malok and Nechsei Tzon Brazel in a problematic marriage to the Kohen. So, V'avde Malok lo yochlu b'truma. In our Mishnah, when it says in the problematic marriage that the Avde Malok don't eat Truma, amai, why don't they eat Truma? L'have k'kinyano shekana kinyan. They should be no different than a second derivative ownership of the Kohen, which is that if the Kohen owns something, then if that object or person owns something else, by derivative property or transitive property, he owns the item. It's akin to what we say, kosh kana eved kana rabo. If an eved makes a kinyan on something, he's really doing it on behalf of his master. So it's over here. If something is part of the ownership or family of the Kohen, then those items or those individuals, if they make a kinyan, if they have ownership, then through that derivative property, transit property, they're also entitled to eat truma. So over here, where the woman is married to the Kohen, she's entitled to truma because she is kinyan kaspo through erusin. She becomes a part of the Kohen's family, and therefore she's entitled to truma. So the nechsei malok, the avadim that she owns, because when it comes to avdei malok, we said that the ownership resides with her, even though the Kohen has the utilization of them. But her ownership should suffice in order to entitle them to Truma. Just like she's entitled to Truma, her kinyan, her ownership in this item should also entitle those avadim to Truma. The Tanya, minayin the Kohen shenasa isha. How do we know that a Kohen who marries a woman? Vikana avadim. Or he purchases avadim eved gnani, sheyochlu b'truma, that they're entitled to eat the Truma. Shenamar. Because the pasuk says, Kohen ki yikne nefesh kinyan kaspo, hu yochal bo. That anything that is the possession of the Kohen, that means both avadim that are considered to be the possession of the Kohen, or isha, wife, who now is a family participant of the Kohen through a rusin, which has the equivalence of a kinyan, they are entitled to eat truma. Uminayin isha shekanta avadim, v'avadav shekanu avadim. And how do we know that a woman who purchased avadim or an eved that purchased an eved, sheyochlu b'truma, that they're entitled to eat truma? Shenamar, the same drasha that we said here, v'kohen ki yikne nefesh, kinyan kaspo hu yochal bo. It says a kohen ki yikne nefesh, when he has a relationship of kinyan with an individual, then kinyan kaspo hu yochal bo. Then the kinyan, that extraneous terminology of kinyan kaspo, says that even those that are the ownership of the kinyan, they also will be entitled to eat truma. Kinyanoshe kana kinyan ochel. So therefore, anything that is a kinyan or part of the family of the Kohen, if they acquire something, then they're also entitled to eat truma. Now Rashi over here asks the simple question is, if they are the servants of the Kohen, how are they purchasing avadim that are not belonging to the master? We just mentioned before, kol shekana eved kana rabo, that the eved knani is considered to be an extension of the master, and anything that he acquires is really on behalf of the master. So there's really no separate ownership. When that eved buys another eved, it's really as if the rav or the adon is buying that other eved, and there's no independent ownership. So how is it here that you have an eved that has independent ownership from the master? So Rashi explains that the case is a case where someone granted the right to the Eved with the stipulation that the master will not have a right in it. So they granted a gift to this Eved by which the Eved will own it and the master will not own it. And because of that, it is the kinyan of the Eved, but not the kinyan of the Rav. Tosafot says it's a case possibly where the owner is mafkir the Eved. So even though now the Eved has independent ownership, he's still entitled to eat truma. So if he was mafkir the Eved has the right to acquire things, and he's still entitled to eat truma. And so because of that, they will be the kinyan of the Eved, independent of the master. So either way, what we see here is that even if the object is not the direct ownership of the Kohen, But if it's a derivative ownership of the kohen, meaning something who he owns or has that relationship of kinyan with, if they purchase or they own something, that item is also entitled to eat truma. And therefore, nichsei malog of the wife of the kohen should be entitled to eat truma, because the wife is entitled to truma. And since she's entitled to truma through derivative property, her ownership of the nichsei malog also were entitled to eat truma because of the pasuk or the braita that we just quoted now. So why in the beginning of our Mishnah does it state that the nichsei tzon of Barzel do get the right to eat truma, but the nichsei malog do not get that right? The Gemara answers, kolo echel machil. Anybody who's entitled to eat truma through their relationship with the kohen, they can also feed truma. They can entitle this derivative property to truma. Anyone who does not eat truma is not entitled to truma because of their relationship with the kohen. Then they cannot feed, they cannot grant that right to another party. So in the instance of our Mishnah, if the wife is married to the kohen properly in a proper marriage, she's entitled to eat truma. Therefore, since she's entitled to eat truma, her avadim, her ownership, will also be entitled to truma, and therefore the avde malog will be entitled to truma in that case. On the other hand, when it's a problematic marriage, then the woman is a chlala, and because she's a chlala, she's not entitled to eat truma. She's psula mina kuna, which is also psula mina truma, and she's not entitled to eat truma. Since she's not entitled to eat truma, her ownership, that derivative ownership, will also not be entitled to eat truma, and that'll explain the Mishnah. In the case of a proper marriage, the abdei malog do participate in the truma, or the eating of truma. On the other hand, when it's a problematic marriage and she does not eat, the nichsei malog are not entitled to eat truma, just like she's not entitled to eat truma. In both instances, the nichsei tzon of Barzel will be entitled to eat truma because they are the direct ownership of the kohen. Where it says velo, is that really a principle that if you can't eat truma, then you can't grant that right to someone else? Varei arel, v'cholat meim. A case of an arel, a kohen who is unable to get a brit milah because his brothers died from milah. So it's not something that really is his fault. It's not because he doesn't believe in milah, he just can't. But even though that's the reason, he's not allowed to participate or to eat truma or kodoshim. V'cholat meim, anybody who's tamei is not allowed to eat truma. Nevertheless, even though shenan ochlim, these parties do not eat, umachilin, yet they do allow others to eat on their behalf. Meaning that if this arel kohen marries a woman, she will be entitled to eat truma. The ownership of this kohen arel will be entitled to truma. Tmeim, the same thing. If one is tamei, then the wife of a kohen tamei is entitled to eat truma. And similarly, the ownership, the avadim owned by a kohen tamei are allowed to eat truma. It says, Hatam Pumayu Kaivluhu, which literally means that their mouth is hurting them, which is equivalent of something like a temporary sore or a passing phenomenon. Wait a minute, that's not a comparable case. Over there, the problems are external problems, problems that either can be fixed or are not permanent in nature. Something that's an inhibitor, but not integral or fundamental to the status of the individual, which is that the kohen tamei is not permanently tamei. Even though he might be tamei for a duration, for a long time, it's something that can be cleared up, and he will be entitled to eat truma at certain points in time. And same thing with the kohen arel. It's an exogenous variable that's blocking him from eating the truma, which is the lack of milah. If he could get a milah, he would be able to eat truma, and maybe even in the future he might be able to get a milah and eat truma. So here, the block or the inability to eat truma are caused by matters that either will be solved or can be solved or are temporary of nature. That is not true here by this woman who's involved in an improper marriage. She is now a chlala, and that is a permanent status. It's a status that will outlive this marriage. It's a status for this woman that will be maintained for the rest of her life. She will never be entitled to eat truma, and therefore she may not be able to grant truma to others. So you could separate in these cases. Mar says, okay, we'll give you another case. Vahari mamzer. Sheinu ochel umachil. What about the case of a mamzer who doesn't eat, but he does cause the another object to eat? This is a case, the truth is, as Rashi points out, that it could be true even without a mamzer, it could be true even of a regular Yisrael. If in a marriage a Kohen marries a Bat Yisrael, that Bat Yisrael is entitled to eat Truma as long as her husband is alive. If they then have children, then even after the husband is deceased, the wife is still entitled to eat Truma because of the children that are born of the marriage. So in an instance where this Kohen and woman, Bat Yisrael, had a child, had a daughter, and then that daughter happens to marry a mamzer, and the product of that marriage is a mamzer. So they have a grandchild that is a mamzer, and then the daughter passes away. So the only living descendant of this Kohen and Bat Yisrael is a grandchild who is a mamzer. That grandchild who is a mamzer will entitle his grandmother to continue to eat truma in the house of the Kohen, meaning that even though the Kohen has passed away, she's entitled because there's zera, there is a product offspring from this marriage. And the offspring from this marriage, even though they cannot eat truma because he's a mamzer, nevertheless, she can continue to eat truma. So here you have a case where a mamzer, he himself cannot eat truma, but he allows his grandmother to continue to eat truma in the Kohen's house. Now, as Rashi points out, it would have been the same with the regular Yisrael. Even if the Kohen and this Bat Yisrael had a daughter, and the daughter married Yisrael, and then they had a grandchild who was Yisrael, and then the daughter passed away, that grandchild who is Yisrael, who's also not entitled to eat Truma, would also cause his grandmother, give the right to his grandmother to eat Truma. Why did the Gemara bring the case of a Mamzer? Either because it's the extreme case, where even though he's a Mamzer, he entitles his grandmother to eat Truma, or because it's a Mishnah upcoming, and it's just referencing, it's a quick way to reference a Mishnah that we will see later on that talks about that case. But either way, now we have an example of a status that is permanent. Whether it's a Yisrael or a Mamzer, that status is not going to change ever, and they will not be entitled to eat Truma. And despite that fact, they still grant the right to someone else. So your principle doesn't seem to hold water. So Amar Ravina, reinterprets the principle and says, Kinyan ochel kamar doesn't mean kola ochel ma'achil, but rather kol kinyan ochel kamar. Kinyan ochel ma'achil. She'eno ochel, eno ma'achil. So that means that a kinyan, somebody whose right is granted through a kinyan, that their relationship is a relationship of kinyan, like the wife of the Kohen, where the relationship is a kinyan, through the erusin, which generates the kinyan, even though she won't be entitled to truma until nisuin. That's for reasons that we've discussed earlier, and the Gemara Ketubot will explain, whether it's because of the fear that she'll eat the truma and share it with Beit Aviyah, or the problems of simpon, maybe the Kohen will back out of the marriage at Nisuin. But either way, that's only an imposition derabanan. Midoraita, at the time of Erusin, when the kinyan is created, then the woman is entitled to truma. So anytime you're talking about a kinyan, that kinyan, if that kinyan eats truma, ma'achil, then it entitles others to eat the truma. She'enu ochel, a kinyan that is not entitled to eat truma, enu ma'achil, doesn't grant the right. So over here, the woman who is granted the right to eat truma with her husband who is a Kohen, that right comes through a kinyan. So if she is entitled to eat, then she will also entitle her ownership to eat truma. On the other hand, in a case where there's a problematic marriage and she's a chlala and she is not entitled to eat truma, so even though she's the kinyan of the Kohen, nevertheless, she's not entitled to eat truma, she will not pass the entitlement over to her ownership, to her nechsei melok. So Ravina sees the problem here in the Mishnah being a do'oraita problem, a Torah level problem, which is when the woman is entitled to eat truma, she then grants that right to her servants or her ownership. And that's min haTorah. If she is not entitled to eat truma, then this derivative kinyan or transitive property of kinyan will not apply, midoraita from the Torah, and the avadim, the avdei melog, will not participate in truma. And that explains what happened in our Mishnah here. And it's not like what we said before, that kol ochel ma'achil, anybody eats truma can't feed truma. It's not a generic statement. It's talking about in an instance of kinyan, where the relationship is generated through kinyan, that relationship depends on achila. The ability to eat will grant the ability to others or derivatives to also eat in the truma. Now we have two other amoraim that suggest that the problem here is not midoraita, but rather a rabbinic issue. which is Virova Amar Midoraita Michle Achli. Mina Torah Ein Hochanami the Nichtse Melo, like in the latter half of the Mishnah, will be entitled to Truma, and that will be the case even in an illicit marriage. V'rabbanon hu deGazri behu, but the Rabbanon were guzer by Nichtse Melo in that marriage that they will not be entitled to eat Truma. Kedei Shutomar, because they want this to precipitate a certain amount of tension in the marriage that will cause them to divorce, because we don't want this marriage to stick around because it's a problematic marriage. So she will say, Ani eni ochelet, I don't get truma, I'm not entitled to truma, avadai ein ochlim, and my servants aren't entitled to eat truma, zonahi eats lo. Now whether she says this or the husband will realize that she's the equivalent of a zonah. This marriage is not taking on the status of ishut or a normal marriage because she's lacking an entitlement to eat truma. Her servants are lacking to eat truma, and therefore there'll be a realization that this is a problematic type of marriage. Hilkach ati lafuka. Therefore, he will divorce her. And that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to precipitate a divorce, a separation of these two, because it's an illicit or illegal marriage. So in order to facilitate that, we penalize the woman and her servants because we are trying to engender ill will, in a sense, between the husband and wife so that they will divorce. Ravashi amar gzeira shema ta'achil la'achar mita. Ravashi says it's a gzeira, maybe she will grant to eat after death. So the problem, or what we're worried about over here, is in the case where the Kohen is married to this woman, and midoraito, as we just said before, the nichse melog, the avdei melog, are entitled to truma, that would only be true while the marriage is still in existence, while the husband or the Kohen is still alive. Because, as we mentioned before, those servants are a derivative or through a transitive property are owned by the Kohen, and therefore they're entitled to truma. Once the Kohen passes away, they are no longer entitled to truma. And our fear is that after the death of the Kohen, that these servants will continue to eat truma, even though they're not entitled. Because once the Kohen dies, the woman is no longer entitled to truma. And since she's not entitled to truma, the Avdei Melog are also not entitled to truma. So our fear is that she will continue to give them truma even after the death of the husband. So the Gemara says, Elamiato, Bat Yisrael shiniseit lekohen lo tachil. Then a Bat Yisrael that is married to a Kohen, she should also not grant her Nichsei Melog or Avdei Melog the right to truma, Gzeirah Shema Tachil Achar Mita. She's in the same predicament, meaning that a Bat Yisrael that marries a Kohen, whether it's a good marriage or not a good marriage, the woman is only entitled to truma because of her marriage to the Kohen. And her servants, her Avdei Melog, are also only entitled to truma because of the marriage. And if the husband passes away, then the Avadim will not be entitled to truma. So if you're worried about this in a problematic marriage, why aren't you worried about this in a good marriage? The same problem exists, which is the entitlement to truma is only because the Kohen's alive. Since the Kohen dies, that entitlement goes away. So why are you worried about the Avadim continuing to eat after the death of the Kohen in a problematic marriage? You should have that same fear even in a proper marriage. That's the way Rashi reads the Gemara and the Girsa that we have in front of us. Tosafot noted that there was an alternate Girsa here, which is Ela Me'ata Bat Yisrael Shiniseit Kohen Lo Tochal. She should not eat. And as Tosafot points out, the problem is not just a problem with her servants, it's a problem with the Bat Yisrael herself. The Bat Yisrael who's married to the Kohen is only entitled to Truma as long as the Kohen is alive. As soon as the Kohen dies, she's not entitled to Truma. So after the death of the Kohen, why don't we worry about the fact she'll continue to eat Truma even though she's not entitled anymore? Forget about her servants, she herself. And therefore, Tosfot says, based on that other gear, so it's a much stronger question, and it's a much more parallel question, because in that case, it's the woman herself, and after death, it terminates. So why should we allow her to eat while he's alive if she's going to lose it after he dies? So therefore, the Gemara has to reject this understanding of Rav Ashi and amend the statement of Rav Ashi. Tosfot does defend the Lashon of Rashi or the Gears of Rashi when it says Lo Tachil, it means Lo Tachil and Lo Tochal. The question is on a dual level. It's both about the Nichsei Melog, the Avdei Melog of the woman and herself. And Lo Tachil is as if it says Lo Tochal and Lo Tachil, and that's how he salvages the Gears that we have here, as well as the way that Rashi explains the Gemara. So Elam Rav Ashi, so we have to amend Rav Ashi, and this is what he says now. Be'almana kohenet. Diametric case where it's a widow who is a bat kohen. So in this case, where she's marrying a kohen gadol, it's a problematic marriage because she's an almana. But she's also a bat kohen. She was a widow who had no children from her first marriage. Therefore, she returned to his father's house to eat truma. She was entitled to truma as a bat kohen. But now she marries this kohen gadol. The marrying of this kohen gadol, number one, does not entitle her to truma. And number two is it makes her into a chlala. And that means that even if the kohen gadol divorces her or he passes away and she's widowed from the kohen gadol, she will not return to eat truma in her father's house. Da'atya le'oruye mi'ikara achle b'truma. Before the marriage, the nichse malog, or the abde malog of this woman, was entitled to eat truma from her father's house, the be'nasha, because she returned to her father's house as a bat kohen. She was a widow without any children, and therefore she's entitled to continue to eat truma. In sivile, when she married the kohen gadol, lehai achle b'truma, the gavrai, the nichse malog, or the abde malog of this woma now are entitled to eat truma because of her husband. So prior to the marriage, the avadim ate because she was a member of her father's household, and therefore they were abde malog, were entitled to truma. Then when she marries the kohen gadol, the abde malog continue to be entitled to truma, even though she's not entitled to truma. The abde malog are entitled to truma because they're now owned by the husband in a transitive property. Vahashta, then after divorce, or after she's widowed from this kohen gadol, hadri le the milte kamaita. Then she thinks, all right, so before we eat truma when I was in my father's house, now they eat truma because I'm married to the kohen gadol. Now the kohen gadol died or divorced me, I'm going back to my father's house. Then the abde malog will continue to eat there. Velo yado. And she won't pay attention or realize demikara lo shavita lenafsha chalala. In the beginning, beforehand, before she married this kohen gadol, even though she was an almana, she wasn't a chlala. And therefore, she was entitled to go back to her father's house and eat truma. And that's why the abde malog were entitled to truma. Hashto, now post the marriage with this kohen gadol, shavita nafsha chalala. She now made herself into a psula. And now that she's a psula, she won't be entitled to return to her father's house, and she is not entitled to get truma. So therefore, her abde malog won't get truma. But she won't realize that. And she'll just think that it's a continuation of what it was before. Beforehand, she got truma, and the abde malog got truma. When she was married to this kohen gadol, her abde malog got truma. Now he dies, she should just go back to the status quo that was before, and they should get truma. The answer is no, because her status changed here. And because of her status change, the abde malog are no longer entitled to truma. So therefore, that's why, while she's married in this illicit marriage, we say the abde malog do not get truma, so we don't make this mistake. That after the death of the kohen gadol, after he divorces her, that she goes back to the old way and the abde malog will get truma again from her father's house. That's not the case. So we say during the marriage they won't get, so it won't be a problem after the marriage. Where it says, tinach almana kohenet. Okay, that's a great gezeirah if you're talking about a kohenet or a bat kohen that got married to a kohen gadol in this case. But almana bat Yisrael ma'ika the meimar. If she's simply a widow that is a Bat Yisrael who wasn't entitled to Truma before, you don't have this fear afterwards of her making that mistake because she wasn't entitled to Truma, or neither were Avadim prior to this point in time. Where it says, Vamunuta lo plige rabbana. It's a low plug. It's a gzera of low plug for an Almana Bat Kohen. They'll make a gzera also by an Almana Bat Yisrael, so there's no confusion at all. So it's a low plug because of an Almana Bat Kohen, but it'll affect all Almanot. So according to Rav Ashi and Rava, the problem in our Mishnah of why the Abde Malog are not entitled to Truma is a problem Dirabonon. Midoraita, they would be entitled to Truma, but they are blocked either because of what Rava says, we're trying to dissolve this marriage, so we're putting pressure into the marriage by not allowing them to have Truma, or according to Rav Ashi, we're afraid of what might happen after this marriage, that she might think she's entitled to go back to her father's house and the Avde Malog will continue to eat Truma. So because of that, we say they're not entitled while she's married to this Kohen Gadol. Whereas Ravino believes that the problem is Deoraita. Only a Kinyan that eats Truma is entitled to eat Truma can then grant that right to others. But if the Kinyan herself, here this woman, who, because she's now a Chlala because of the illicit marriage, is not entitled to eat Truma, she will not grant that right to her kinyan terav de melog, and the problem in our Mishnah is a problem de oraita. Now the Gemara continues, itmar, ha-machneset shum lebala. Person who brings in nechsei tzon or barzel into the marriage, they are assessed, their value is assessed at the beginning of the marriage, and now the woman is coming to collect on that promise in the ktubah. He omerit kilai ani notelet. I'm going to take the objects I brought back into the marriage, meaning that those objects are still around. And she says, I don't want the value. I want the objects themselves. Now, obviously, they're equivalent to the value, but she says, I want to keep the kelim. Vehu omer damim ani notain. He says, listen, when you brought them into the marriage, they became mine. They're my ownership. And all you're entitled to is the value. That's what we wrote in the ktubah. Hadim imi. Who is right over here? Who is entitled to these kelim in this instance? Is the woman who brought them in as part of her dowry, she's entitled to these kelim? Even though the ktubah only promises her value, that's only a second or backup issue here. Really, she gets the right to get the kelim. If the kelim are not there or the value is not there, then the husband promises to make whole on the value. Or do we say no, that these objects now become the full-fledged ownership of the husband? And the woman is only entitled to the value. So here it comes to the termination of this marriage, and she's demanding the kelim themselves. And the husband's saying, I only have to give you the value, I don't have to give you the kelim themselves. Who is right in their claim? So Rav Yehuda Amar Hadin Ima, that she is correct, that these objects belong to her, and she's entitled to make a claim on these objects. Ravi Ami Amar Hadin Imo, that truthfully the din is with him, and that he doesn't have to give her the objects, he can pay her. Now, what's the reasoning behind their positions? Rav Yehuda Amar Dinima, she is correct, because Mishum Shevach Beit Avia Dida Havi, because these are objects that belong to her father's household, I would term it as there is sentimental value to these objects that were brought in, and because of that, she's entitled to these objects. And even more so, the reason that they were brought into the marriage was for this woman to use them and to utilize them. They are a part of the glory of her father's house. They were brought into the marriage for her to utilize. The only thing that the ktubah does is protects the value of those objects. But the objects themselves are for her utilization, are for her benefit, and they are part of a sentimental or connection to the wife's family. And therefore, if there's some reason that this is now breaking up, she's entitled to take those objects back. If they don't exist, if there's a diminishment in value somehow, then the husband has to pay for it. But otherwise, they really are her objects. On the other hand, Rabbi Avi Amar Hadin Imo, the din is with him, Kevin Damar Mar, Imetu, Metu Lo, Vim Hotiru, Hotiru Lo, as the Mishnah says, that he's now on the hook for the full value of these objects. Ho Vechaya Vacharayutan Yochlu. And like our Mishnah says, because he is responsible for their value, they are entitled to eat Truma, because they are his ownership. So what we see here is that these objects are owned by him. If they're owned by him, he has the right to decide whether he gives the object or he gives the equivalent value. So Amar Rav Safra, Miktani V'hein Shelo. The Mishnah doesn't say that they belong to him. All it says is, Ho B'chayav Acharyutan Iktani. It says because he is responsible for them. That's why they eat Truma. There's nothing in the Mishnah that says that he owns them. It just says because he's responsible for their value, therefore they're granted truma. But the bottom line is that they don't belong to him. They are his responsibility, but they don't belong to him. Wait a minute. Anytime that you're responsible for an object, you get to eat truma. Don't we have a Mishnah? Israel shusachar para mi kohen. A Israel that rents a cow or some animal to do work from the kohen. He can feed him animal feed that is chayav in truma. As Tosafot points out, there's a delicate balance here because if it was only animal food or animal feed, then it wouldn't be chayav in truma. So it has to be something that's ra'ui le'achilat adam in order for it to be chayav in truma. On the other hand, if it really was ra'ui le'achilat adam, then you wouldn't be allowed to give it to the behema because that would be hefsed of truma because you're feeding it to animals instead of human beings. So it has to be that these karshinei truma, their primary usage is for animal feed. Nevertheless, they can be eaten by humans, and therefore they're chayav in truma. So these karshinei truma are normally given to animals as animal feed. The Israel over here is allowed to feed this animal karshinei truma. Kohen shesachar para Israel. other hand, a Kohen who rents from the Yisrael, means the opposite relationship, Aval Bishim is an Oteh Alav, even though he is responsible to feed the animal, Lo Yachilenu Karshinei Truma, he's not allowed to give it Truma. So the Yisrael, who is responsible, feed the animal, but the animal remains under the ownership of the Kohen, therefore he can give the animal Karshinei Truma, assuming that the Yisrael owns the Karshinei Truma. So he has the monetary value of these Karshinei Truma belong to him. He just can't get Hanah from them because the Yisrael is not allowed to eat the Truma. But since it's the Parah of the Kohen, he is giving the Hanah to the Kohen. So the Parah of the Kohen is benefiting from the Truma and he's eating the Truma. And the monetary value belongs to Yisrael. And he's allowed to feed this Parah of the Kohen, these Karshinei Truma. And the opposite relationship, he cannot. The Kohen cannot feed the Yisrael's animal Karshinei Truma. But what you see from here, in a case of Yisrael Shesachar, what is the relationship? A socher is responsible be'achriyutan. He's responsible for deneva and aveda. He's not responsible for ones or for diminishment in value, but he is responsible for deneva and aveda. And you see here, despite the fact that he has achrayut over here, he doesn't take away the ownership of the kohen and vice versa. If the kohen is on the hook here for deneva and aveda, that doesn't entitle him to feed the Yisrael's animal, the parah, a karshinei truma. So achrayut is not sufficient to generate the ability to eat truma. So how could you make that deal? Could have a mishnah that it's simply the responsibility that is granting the right of truma? It seems like ownership is, because here we have a case of achrayut and it does not grant the right to feed truma. Now, just as a side note, there is a machloket in Shas as to what is the status of a socher. It's a machloket if it's a socher is kishomer chinam or shomer sachar. It's pretty clear from the Gemara here that a socher is being treated like a shomer sachar and is chayav in gneva veda. Mar says, v'tizbra, are you really comparing apples and apples in this case? Over here, the socher, he might be chayav in cases of theft or if it gets lost. If something extraordinary, onus out of his control happens, or if it weakens, or if it loses value, is he on the hook for that? The answer is no. So the ownership here is not similar to the ownership of our Mishnah, because the achrayut, the responsibility vis-a-vis this object, is a much lighter responsibility. He only has responsibility for Gneva Veda, as opposed to the Kohen in the Mishnah, who doesn't only have responsibility for Gneva and Aveda, but he has for anything that happens to the object, any change in value, he is on the hook for that value. So therefore, that's not a good comparison. Halo damyo el lesefa. It's much more comparable to the latter half of the Mishnah. Yisrael shisham para mi Kohen. Yisrael, who is, according to Rashi, renting from the Kohen, and then when they bring this para into the rental agreement, they assess the value of the para, and then the Yisrael is on the hook for the value of this para. Not only is he a socher, and he has the responsibilities of a socher, in addition to that, he also took on responsibility for the value of the object, and he will return it exactly at its current value. In that case, Yisrael shesham para mikoin lo yachilenu karshinei truma. He may not feed it truma, because now he becomes like the owner of the animal, like in our Mishnah, where he's not only chayav for Gneva Aveda, he's chayav for the value change. In that instance, it becomes like his. And if it's the Yisrael's, he can't feed it Karshinei Truma. And the opposite case of a Kohen, Shesham Param Yisrael, where the Kohen takes responsibility for the animal and its value from the Yisrael, Yachilenu Karshinei Truma, then it becomes like the ownership of the Kohen, and he is entitled to feed it Truma. So you see here that it is the Achrayut that is driving the ownership or the entitlement of these Avadim to eat in the Truma. It's not necessarily the ownership of the Kohen or the husband. It's the Achrayut that is generating it. And you can't say necessarily that he owns it. Just the fact that he, during this time period, since he is responsible for their value, that responsibility generates a relationship here between him and the object that entitles the object to Truma. But it doesn't mean that they are his. If it comes time to return them, he'll have to give them back, those objects back. So there's no proof from our Mishnah necessarily if you compare it to the latter half of the Mishnah in the case of Achrayut. Just as a side note, Rashi explains that latter case as a case of where he rented it and then he guarantees the value. Rabbeinu Tam says that can't be the case because that's actually a case of rebit. That's an asur relationship because you're paying value plus you're guaranteeing the underlying value. It's the equivalent of paying interest on a bond. You're guaranteeing the principal value and you're paying value on that interest or schirut on it. Therefore, Tosafot explains the case where he's shoel. He borrows the object and then guarantees the value. There's only a guarantee of the value. There's no payment of the interest stream or the schirut, and that's why it's a legal transaction. So Rashi explains it as a case of schirut, but the Rabbeinu Tam says it's got to be a case of she'ila, a case of borrowing and not schirut. The Rambam, on the other hand, explains it differently and says that it's a case where they went into business together and this Israel or Kohen agrees to basically fatten up these animals and then sell them, and they're going to share in the profits. And that's where he takes on the value. So it's actually a transactional nature, not a schirut or a case where there's a guaranteed stream of payment. There's actually a shared value in the profits and not just a guarantee of the value and a fixed stream of money. So then, Yativ Rabba v'Rav Yosef b'shilhei pirkei d'Rav Nachman. Rabba and Rav Yosef, who were peers, were sitting at the end of the drusha or the learning by Rav Nachman. Yatve v'kamrei. And they said, Tanya kavate to Rav Yehuda. We have a braita that supports Rav Yehuda's position that adini ma. But Tanya kavate to Rabbi Ami. And we have a braita that supports the position of Rabbi Ami that adini mo. Tanya kavati de Rabbi Ami. We have a braita that supports Rabbi Ami. Avdei tzonu barzel yotzin b'shein v'ayin li'ish. Ava lo li'isha. There's a rule with regards to an Eved Knani that if the owner of the Eved Knani knocks out his tooth or his eye, that automatically grants the Eved Knani the right to freedom. That's only true if the owner does it. So over here it says that when it comes to Avadim that are tzonu barzel, if tooth is knocked out by the ish, by the husband, then they go free. Avalodisha, but not by the woman. So what you see from here is who's the true owner of the Tzon of Barzel over here. The true owner of the Avdei Tzon of Barzel must be the husband, because he's the only one who grants them the right to freedom when he knocks out their tooth or their eye. Tosafot points out over here that it's not so clear why this Braita is a proof to Rabbi Ami, because even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that while the Avadim are in the marriage, they certainly are controlled by the husband and owned by the husband. And he would agree that if the husband knocked out the tooth or the eye of this Eved, then they go free. That the only thing that the woman has on this Eved is a shibud, an encumberment that will allow her to take it back if she gets divorced or widowed here. But she has no real ownership. And therefore, if the husband knocks out the shein or the ayin, for sure, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that he goes free. So how is this Braita a proof to Rabbi Ami? So he says it's actually from the second half of the Braita that's the proof to Rabbi Ami, which is, it says, V'isha lo. By the woman, she doesn't have that right. And as Tosfot says, while the husband's alive, it's clear that the woman doesn't have that right. If she knocks out the tooth or the eye of the Eved Kanani here, that Soner Bazel, of course they won't go free because she's not the owner of them. So it must be that that statement the Braita is referring to even after death, even after the death of her husband. The Isha, if she knocks out the Shein or Ayin of this Eved Kanani, they do not go free. And what that shows is that after the death of the husband, the woman does not own them, and they remain in the ownership of the husband. And that's the proof to Rabbi Ami over here that the Avdei Tzon Barzel really belong to the husband. Then we have a Tanya Kavati to Rabbi Yehuda. We have a Braita that supports Rabbi Yehuda's position, which is Amchneset Shum Lebala. A woman who brings in an assessed value into the marriage, which is Tzon Barzel, Imratzaha Baldimkor Loimkor. The husband wants to sell him. He doesn't have a right to sell him because of the woman's ownership over here. Seems like she has a blocking right. Velo od elo afilu hichnista shum mishelo. Even if he brings in his own property and assesses that value in the ketubah to her, Imratzaha Baldimkor Loimkor. Then if the husband wants to sell it, he still does not have the right to sell it. You see that Nichsei Tzonu Barzel, whether they were brought into the marriage by her or by him, those Nichasim, she has enough of a right in these objects that he cannot sell them independent of her, because she still has a right or an ownership here. Machrushnehem, if they both sold it, I mean, it doesn't matter which one, this is either or, if she sold it or he sold it, the Parnasa, in order to provide sustenance or livelihood, Zeya Maseh Lifnei Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, this incident came up before Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that the husband has the right to take back the transaction. Now, this is a machloket Rashi and Tosafot, what exactly happened over here. According to Rashi, the husband sold the objects while his wife was still alive. he was not really entitled to sell them because his wife has a blocking or veto right on the sales. Then his wife passes away. When his wife passes away, all the rights of his wife now move over to the husband. And since the wife had a blocking right in the transaction, when she passes away and that right passes to the husband, he can now go back and reverse the transaction. He has a right to take the transaction back because now he has the rights of his wife who could have blocked the transaction. So retroactively, now he can go and block the transaction even though he was the one who sold it. Tosafot says that that makes no sense. That if while he's alive, the object is considered to be fully sold, and then all of a sudden when his wife dies, he can now reverse the transaction. Either the transaction didn't get off the ground to start with, and that's why it can be reversed. Or if the transaction went through, then it should be permanent. He shouldn't be granted the right after the fact to go take it back. And therefore, what it means that Bal Yotz Motzi Midei Lukuchot, here Tosfot says that Nira Kaperish Rach, Dena Mechach Kayam Klal, Afil Sha'achat. The husband makes the sale, it doesn't go through at all. It never went through. According to Rashi, it goes through until the wife passes away and grants the right to the husband to veto the transaction. But Tosfot says, if the wife didn't say anything during her lifetime, why all of a sudden does he get the right now to object or veto? So it must be that the transaction is null and void from the beginning, and it wasn't a good transaction. The Tikkun Rabbanan Shalotei Isha Tzrichah Dechuach Lachzor Lohutzi Miyad Alukuchot. Because Chamim didn't want to have the woman have to go run around to get the property back if her husband passes away. So they basically deemed such a sale null and void from the beginning, even though technically maybe the husband could have sold it while he was alive until he died and then the woman could take it back. But in order to make it easier for the woman, we just cancel the sale up front and as if the sale never went through at all. And that demonstrates the woman's rights or ownership here in the property. Because since she has a blocking right in the transaction, whether according to Rashi, that is an entitlement that can pull the object back from the lekuchot after her death by the husband, or according to Tosafot, who deems the transaction null and void from the beginning, you still see that the woman has rights here in the Tzon and Barzel, rights that are strong enough to either nullify the transaction or take the transaction back after the fact. And therefore, it shows you that she owns the objects in the end. So then, Amar Rav, Amar Rav Nachman, the conclusion of the sugi is, Halacha ki Rabbi Yehuda. Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, that a dinima, that the objects really belong to her. Amalei Rovo, the Rav Nachman, Vahatanyo Kavote, the Rabbi Ami. What are you going to do with the fact that there's a braita that supports Rabbi Ami's position? So he says, that's what I meant. Avagav, the Tanyo Kavote, the Rabbi Ami. Even though there's a braita that supports Rabbi Ami, Mistavra, time of the Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda's reasoning makes more sense. Mishum Shevach Beit Avia. Because these are really objects that are the pride and joy of her family. They have sentimental value to her family. And therefore, the first right is to take the objects back. If the objects don't exist or they've diminished in value, then the husband can pay out either in kind or make up the diminishment in value. But the first right of collection comes from the kelim themselves. So now the Gemara moves on to a derivative case of this. Hayi itata, the ailala le gavra itztala de milta. She brought into the marriage a cloak or a garment that was made out of fine silk. Big tubata, and it was assessed in the ktuba, so it was nixei tzon and barzel. Shachiv, the husband passed away. Shaklua yatme, the orphans, meaning the children of the marriage, went ahead and took it. Parsua amitna, and then they spread it over the mate. They made it basically into the equivalent of tachrichim for the mate. Amarava, kanyo mitna, that the mate here is kone, the object. Amarle nanai, braid Rav Yosef, braid Rava. We saw in yesterday's daf, we saw Rabbi Yosef braid the Rava. Over here, we see Rava's grandson, Nanai, who's the son of Rabbi Yosef, the son of Rava. So he asked the Rav Kahana, Vahama Rava Amar Rav Nachman. Didn't we just say before, Halacha ki Rabbi Yehuda? The Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, which is a dinima. A dinima means that she really owns the objects here. So how come here the Yitomim have the right to go ahead and give this jacket over to the mate and take away her ownership of the jacket or of the cloak here? So he says there, Marmalei, Rav Kahana says back to him, Mi lo moda Rav Yehuda de mechusar guvaino. Even Rav Yehuda agrees that the woman is entitled to claim the object and to collect on the object, but in the interim, the object remains in the ownership of the husband. The husband has control over the object. She just has a right. She has an encumbrance in this object, which will grant her the right to take it back. But given de mechusar guvaino, since she has yet to collect, she hasn't taken back the object, then it is b'shutei kai. It sits in the possession of the husband. And Rova the Tamei, and Rova is Lishitato. We again saw this earlier in the Masechta, which is Hekdesh, Chameitz, Vishichrur, Mafkin, Midei Shibud. That when it comes to certain transactional items, they can then break the encumbrance or the lien that a person has on such an object. So for instance, Hekdesh, if someone is Makdish an object, then a creditor that had a lien on this object, that nullifies the lien and the object goes out to Hekdesh, even though he had a lien on the property. The same thing is true with Shichrur. If one frees an Eved Kenani, if the creditor had a lien on this Eved Kenani, that lien is gone. Now, he may collect from the other property of the debtor, but his lien on this property is severed because these items are so powerful they can break the lien. So Hekdesh, Shichrur, and Chameitz. Chameitz is a little more complicated case, but it's a case where a Jew lent money to a non-Jew and there's Chameitz used as collateral. So if the chametz of the Jew is given as collateral to a non-Jew after he borrowed money from that non-Jew, then the chametz, which the non-Jew has a lien on, that lien is broken because of the Isser of chametz. And that Isser chametz, since it breaks the lien, makes it that the chametz belongs to the Jew, and now it becomes chametz shavar lava pesach, and it's asur behana'ah. So again, chametz breaks the lien of the goy, and the same is true in the reverse. If the Jew lent money to the non-Jew, and then he gave the Jew a lien on the chametz for Pesach, then the chametz remains in the ownership of the goy because the lien of the Jew is not strong enough to make it that the chametz is his chametz. Except, and then that the Gemara Pesachim talks about here, he no eats low, if he actually deposits the chametz, when then it's no longer mechuser guvaina, the collection is no longer missing over there, then the collateral given to the goy will be remain the goy's chametz and will not be a problem. And the reverse, if the goy gives the Jew chametz, then it will become a problem of chametz shavar lava pesach. But you see from here that these objects have the ability to break liens. So some of the Rishonim explain here, so too over here in our case, these cases are all cases of iser hana'ah. So too by the case of a mate. A mate, anything that's given to the mate, it becomes iser hana'ah. So too over here, this jacket or cloak that was given to the mate now becomes iser hana'ah. And that Isser Hana has a strong enough power to break the woman's lien over the cloak that was brought in as Nichsei Tzon or Barzel. Others describe it as being the equivalent of Hekdesh. Because the reason that we learn out the fact that things that are given to a mate are Asur Behana is because we have Gzera Shava by Egla Rufa that says Sham Sham from Tamat Sham Miriam and from Sham by the Egla Rufa that teaches us that anything that is associated with the mate is Asur Behana. So it's a derivative of Hekdesh. So just like Hekdesh breaks liens, so too the mate will break a lien. Those are the two ways that the Rishonim approach this. But what happened over here was, you're right, the woman really has a lien on here, but it's not in her possession. Since it's not her possession, it's Bershutei of the husband, and she has a lien. So now if you do something dramatic, like Hekdesh, Chametz, Shichur, or give it to a mate, that will break the woman's lien on the property, and therefore the mate was koneh the cloak, even though the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, that adinima, that she has the first right to collect out of the possessions before the husband pays her the value of those objects. Now, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, hichnisa lo shnei kelim be'elev zuz. She brought in two vessels, two utensils into the marriage. Each one of them is worth 1,000 zuz. V'shibchuvam du al shnei alafim. And then they went up in value to 2,000 zuz each. Echad notol ketubata. If they get divorced or he passes away, one of those utensils will be given back to her to fulfill the nichsei tzon barzel of her ketubah. Her ketubah assessed the value at 2,000 zuz. Now one of those kelim is worth 2,000 zuz. So he hands her one back, one of those kelim, and now he satisfied the requirement to pay back the nichsei tzon barzel. Echad notenet damim v'notalto mipnei shevach beit aviyah. The other utensil, she's entitled to pay 2,000 zuz and to get that utensil. He can't just say, I'm going to keep the utensil now, but she has the right to pay money and to receive it. Maika Mashmalon, what is that coming to teach us? That Shevach Beit Aviyah Didohavi, that the sentimental objects of her father's house or the objects she brings into the marriage are hers or in her right to take them. Ha'am Rav Rav Yehuda Charazimna, we just saw that before. The Rav Yehuda says, Adin Ima. So, we would have thought that's only if she comes to make the claim through our ketubah, meaning for Nichsei Tzon Barzel. In this case, only one of the objects will satisfy the value of Nichsei Tzon Barzel, and that's why she's entitled to take that and demand that instead of money. But aval mitan demei umishkalo. But for the second object, which he doesn't have any obligation to give it to her, he doesn't have any obligation to pay her anymore, so maybe she shouldn't be entitled to it. So kamash malan, no, even in that case, she has the right to purchase that object back from him. She has basically the first right of refusal on all objects. First and foremost, to satisfy the value of nechsei tzonim barzel and ketuba. And secondarily, she can take the object and then pay the value of the object to him. She has that right to the object, and he is only entitled to keep the monetary value that exceeds the assessment in the ketuba, not the object itself. She is always entitled to get the objects back first because of Shevach Beit Aviya, because they really belong, and they're the pride and joy of her father's house. They are meant for her benefit, and they are have sentimental value, and therefore she's entitled to get them, whether through her ketubah, or whether through paying their value, if they exceed the value that has been assessed in the ketubah. Okay, we're going to stop here, on the top of Samach Zayin Amud Aleph by the Mishnah.